Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
Mark Kappelman joins me here today, and we are going to talk everything associated with accounting and real estate investing. Mark does some investing himself and has established quite the portfolio, but we have a number of rabbit holes we can go down here today, Mark, and I warned you, you're probably going to have to rein me in on a few things. But before we jump into things, I want to direct everybody. You have offered to give anyone and everyone a chance to meet directly. So go over to rea.co/thank-you. And I'm going to make sure that is a clickable link in the show notes, but really appreciate your time here today, Mark.
Yeah. Thanks, Ab.
So I'm always curious, especially since you come from an accounting background, how did you find your way into real estate investing?
Yeah, it's a long, kind of long winding road, like probably everybody that's been doing it for a while. But the short answer is I was a CPA working at a big four accounting firm. I don't remember who introduced me to Rich Dad Poor Dad, but like so many people, had a profound impact on me. I was hooked on real estate. I thought immediately I need to start investing in real estate. And fast forward a few years, I'm engaged to my wife. I've moved to Chicago, started out my career in Phoenix. Moved to Chicago, and there was a real estate investing course going on for free on my walk home from work. And my wife heard a Spotify or Pandora ad at the time and said, hey, let's go to this. You've been talking about investing. And those guys on stage that said, hey, make an X amount of money flipping real estate. And we thought, wow, that sounds great. And so kind of fast forward a few more months, we decided we can flip a house. This was back when all the flipping house shows were all the rage 10 years ago, flip this house on A&E and all sorts of shows. And she's an accountant too, ironically. And so we flipped the house and actually made a profit. And of course, you know, it didn't happen overnight. This is a 9-month type thing, but it was more cash than we'd ever had at once. And we were both W-2 employees and our eyes were just open. So fast forward, we rehab a couple more houses. Then we start building new construction because it was a little simpler than rehabbing these 100-year-old homes in Chicago where I'm at now. But then the real big turning point was we bought a six-unit building in Chicago and got introduced to non-recourse, you know, asset-based lending. And that was mind-blowing. We weren't signing personally for notes. It was all about the asset. And, you know, that particular transaction, we were able to refi all of our money out of the deal. And it was exactly what you want to do. It was burr on steroids type deal. And That's why at that point we were hooked. And then just the real quick story to how we started RIA, our company, is that as we were scaling that real estate portfolio and flipping, as anybody knows that has done it, is very time consuming. It's not like owning a passive piece of property. It's like, you know, it can be pretty, a lot going on. And anyways, we had multiple projects going on. We were still working our day jobs. And so we were reading all the entrepreneurial books that said, outsource your admin, focus on driving revenue. And the admin for our real estate business was accounting, even though admin was kind of our revenue source in the W-2 day to day. And so we outsourced our accounting and it just came back really bad. Didn't understand all sorts of real estate terminology that we took for granted. And then we kind of had this realization when I was working at the big four, you had a sector leader for auto and healthcare and tech and media and entertainment. And everybody specializes for a reason, because just like lawyers specialize and doctors specialize, there's all sorts of accounting nuances within each industry. The tax codes are very deep within each. And so we kind of had this thought, hey, look, we need real estate accountants. We thought that was our fatal flaw. So then we started going online to say, all right, find me real estate accountants. And we couldn't find anybody that it felt like, quote unquote, owned the space when you went on Google or when you were looking, searching around. And that was really how we got the idea for the business. And of course, it took us a couple of years to kind of, from having a bad outsourcing experience to actually starting the company. But once we started, we knew, we kind of knew our competitive advantage was going to be, hey, we're CPAs, but we're also deal people. And we've done 1031 and we've hired contractors and we've syndicated and we've done, you know, everything. Underwriting, negotiation. It's not just that I know how to do accounting. It is, we're actually real estate accountants, and we can say that proudly and confidently. And that has kind of resonated as we've grown our company.
Yeah, no, that it sounds like you learned some valuable lessons as you went along here. It makes you wonder, though, if you're doing real estate investing and now you're doing, well, the accounting piece of it, where does your primary focus lie? Is it in the investing, or this is your core business?
Oh, the accounting. At this point, I'm not rehabbing anything and everything's stabilized and it's kind of quote unquote simple. And of course, a big part of the job of property management is accounting. And of course, I've got a company now that's doing the accounting for my property. But 98% of my time is my accounting business. 2% is investing. I'm not spending a lot of time on that. Not that I wouldn't if the right deal comes to me, but I'd rather do passive things right now versus active. But that's just the season of life I'm in at the moment.
Right. So, you know, a lot of people who are getting into real estate investing, they are pulled into the same allure that you did with whether it's wholesaling or they're seeing the fix and flipping. And then they're kind of one man bands, maybe it's a couple, and they're trying to establish this for the first time. Before they engage a company such as yourself, what type of things do they need to get in line to make sure that their accounting is in order?
It's a really good question. So, look, the first things first, I think, first things first, you need a bank account dedicated to your business. Okay. So, like, you know, in terms of if you're a flipper, each LLC, as you know, like within the tax world, or maybe you don't know, but, you know, each LLC needs to be its own standalone business. And so, rule number one of that is not commingling bank accounts personally. Because if that's kind of one of the ways they can pierce the corporate veil, if anything ever bad happened, if somebody goes, look, this LLC bank account looks like it's your piggy bank. You pay your personal credit card bills out of it. You say it owns this piece of property, but, you know, that's just in appearance. In fact, you're kind of using this personally. So, you know, one of the first really things you need to do is just, if you go buy a piece of property and if you're flipping a property, 123 Main Street LLC, one, form the LLC, but two, form a bank account. Make your capital contribution to that bank account and then use that bank account to run the asset. That's kind of first and foremost. If you're commingling personal expenses within your bank account, it's just going to be, one, a headache to do taxes. You want to simplify things. And two, you're exposing yourself to some liability. That's part one. I think once you've done that, then step two is having an accounting system. And, you know, there's some cheap versions out there like QuickBooks Online and, you know, some others, cheap versions. And then, you know, once you actually start having a sizable portfolio, and this was a growing pain that I ran through, you're going to want to move eventually from a QuickBooks to an actual property management system, PMS, like a Buildium, Appfolio, Yardi, because those systems are actually designed, and this assumes you're doing property management also, but they're actually designed with tenant ledgers and owner ledgers and built-in repair and maintenance functions. So I think it's just, you know, for the early people, first and foremost, put it in an LLC. Once you get the LLC, get a bank account dedicated to that LLC. And then two, once you've kind of got that set up, then get your records in an accounting system.
Sure. So I'd be curious, you know, based on your experience, are there some big red flags or somebody that should be aware of, like things that stumbling blocks that somebody would maybe experience right off the bat?
In terms of what, Jack? Can you be a little more specific?
When it comes to their accounting, you know, you mentioned having that initial account set up or keeping your records separate. I guess I'm going to put my flag on my shoulder is that I'm really become a fan of that profit first system, where I even have a separate account, and then I have it starting to, as soon as money comes in, it starts to split things off just so that I have different avenues covered. My taxes are set aside, for example. Do you find that there's any kind of anything like that that somebody should consider or will regret not doing right off the bat?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I've read that book. I like it. I don't actually do that, but not maybe I should. I do like that, though. I think what it comes down to is what you're talking about are kind of capitalizing correctly. And so that could be raising enough equity to do the deal so that you're not constantly dealing with low funds in a bank account and insufficient fund fees. But also, too, just kind of what you're saying is like you're kind of making the case for an accounting system. And what I mean more specifically about that is that if you receive $10,000 in security deposits, your bank account may look like it has 10 grand in it. If you're not actually using a security deposit, you know, best practice would be to take that and move this to a savings account, security deposit account that you're like, hey, that's not my money. It's only my money if they track the place. If they don't, I need to send that back. But if you're using an accounting system, which would be a dual entry accounting system, as that cash comes in, rather than booking that as income to your P&L, it'd be booked as a liability to your balance sheet. So every time you run your balance sheet and you say, what does my assets and liabilities look like as of January 24th, date that we're recording this, you'll see a liability for 10 grand, which is security fund. That assumes you've done accounting and that you're actually doing this. And so that's kind of the case for, and the same thing is for taxes. So, you know, if you're doing really proper accounting, you're going to accrue for taxes. So every month you're going to say, hey, if the tax bill is 12 grand a year, but it only gets paid once a month, each month you should have a journal entry that says, hey, $1,000 tax expense, $1,000, I need to pay this later, which would go into like a accrued expense account. So then each time you run your balance sheet, it's like, hey, $5,000 real estate tax is payable. It might not be payable today, but I know that I'm going to pay that in the future. These are some of the big benefits of running a proper accounting system. But I think, you know, base case of what you're talking about is moving money to bank accounts and escrows and stuff like that. Yeah, brilliant.
So could you talk a little bit, you know, a lot of people are probably struggling, especially when they're growing, whether to keep this internally or hire somebody externally. Can you talk maybe a little bit about the benefits of one over the other? And maybe if you're considering outsourcing, what type of questions should be asked to make sure it's a good fit?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I think it all comes down to budget. And I'm not going to sit here and say everybody should outsource, because that would be disingenuous. For some people, when you're just getting started, I would encourage you to try and probably do the accounting yourself, because I just think, like most things in life, you don't need to be a master accountant, just like you don't need to be a master marketer. But I think before you outsource some of these things, you should have at least tried it and really understood it, or tried to understand it so that you can manage it. So then you can manage the person doing the job later on more effectively. If you have no clue, I mean, I can tell you, we run into a lot of owners sometimes that a lot of times we get hired because their accountant has just quit. Think more of stable businesses. And the owner says, I have no clue what's going on. I don't pay any attention to that. I desperately need help. My accountant has left. You know, I kind of cringe when I hear that. And maybe because I'm an accountant, but I just think there ought to be some, if you own a business, you better have a decent grasp on your numbers and what they are, how much you're making, etc. So I think in the beginning, when you don't have budget, try to do it yourself. If you can actually afford to hire somebody, and I can't tell you what that number is and what that, you know, some people can hire it from day one because they've got budget. If you're syndicating a large deal, I'd probably have outsourced professional accountants for day one. If you have zero confidence, because you need to deliver pro formas to your investors, you need to be confident, and at the end of the year, you're now to do K-1. So I really think it's kind of what phase you're in, but I think at some point you're going to realize that your time is more valuable doing deals than doing accounting. And so my company, and there's others, is, you know, our area of expertise is doing the accounting, but yours might be underwriting deals. And that's probably a lot more profitable to you than paying an outsourced accountant X dollars to do your books. You know, so investors can only answer that question themselves. But I think once you realize the cost of outsourcing or hiring in-house and calculate what your time's worth, I think that's probably where you're going to have your answer.
Just to remind everybody, if you'd like to talk a little bit more in depth regarding what Mark is talking about here, head over to reia.co/thank-you. And I'm going to make sure that's clickable in the show notes. But, and if you found some value in what we're talking about so far today, share it with one of your investor friends. And if you're watching this on YouTube, give us a quick thumbs up. So Mark, I'd be curious then, as if, let's say somebody has decided that they have the budget there, they want to outsource this. Going back to what I was asking before, are there any particular questions that we should ask to make sure that that accountant is ready for the real estate world?
Yeah. Look, that I didn't answer that question. You're absolutely right. You know, my first and foremost is, who's doing the work? How many staff do you actually have? Is it just you? And if it's just you, how many clients do you have? That's going to probably give you an idea of, like, you know, the bandwidth and what you can expect in terms of response times and quality. That's part one. Part two, though, probably maybe even question 1A before that is just, whoa, what's your resume? What's your resume in real estate? How much do you know about real estate? How many units do you guys do the accounting for? What's your experience? And it really kind of, another question I asked is, now you're going down to software. So say you're running Appfolio, or say you're running Yardi. How many clients do you have on Yardi? How many units are you managing on Yardi? If it's commercial or residential, if you're commercial, hey, how many commercial clients do you have? Do you have commercial experience? Camrex, lease abstracts. I mean, you know, real estate is a very big umbrella. And so it's one thing for a person to say they're a real estate accountant, but you really got to keep whittling down. Within office, it could be, within commercial, there's retail, office, industrial. All of them have their own accounting peculiarities. And if I'm an owner interviewing an accountant or a property manager, these are the questions I would be asking.
Yeah, I would imagine that you kind of work hand in hand with the tax preparer as well. What type of things do you take advantage of or that you can help with versus your tax preparer? Where does that line draw, and what type of collaboration do you typically see there?
Yeah, as of today, we're completely complementary. I say as of today because, you know, we have on our roadmap launching a tax business, but at the moment we don't have that. So right now it's 100% complimentary. And so our kind of guarantee to our clients is, look, when we close the books at the end of the year, we're going to deliver the financials to the tax person. You don't need to ask about that. We're going to get it to them on time. It's not going to be late. The books are going to be in clean shape. If they have questions, we're going to answer to those questions. We kind of take all that burden off of the owner. And anybody that's done that before, it is kind of a burden, especially when numbers don't make sense. You know, our clients are primarily property management companies, Jack. And so the property management companies hire us to do the work. And, you know, we inherit a lot of clients that don't have financials that are probably ready for a tax CPA. And that's kind of what our bread and butter is just making sure that the financials that we're delivering are ready for the tax accountant. So it's a pretty big heavy lift that we take off owners and our clients' plate.
It's been kind of hit and miss for me when I've been talking to accountants and tax preparers, because some of them will be free to feel comfortable giving you advice and direction on how to plan accordingly. Are you in that situation where you feel comfortable kind of helping the business owner kind of plan things out? I mean, you know, a great way is depreciation schedules, or, hey, you're doing too much wholesaling and flipping. You probably want to acquire a rental property to take advantage of some of the tax benefits. Do you help with some of that planning?
We don't really do that, Jack. you know, I don't want to say we do. I think if and when we launch a tax business, then we would. You know, our really specialty is bank reconciliation, AP, accounts payable, and financial statement close, and delivering financials that banks, investors, and tax people, and any person that knows how to read real estate financials understands. Those are usually our main stakeholders. So what you're talking about is tax stuff. I think it's wildly valuable. And I think that, first of all, CPAs don't want to do that most of the time because it's free and they're trying to sell their services. But even still, most accountants, I'm going to say most because not all, are very reactive. And it's always just after the fact, hey, send me your financials and what did you do? Right. And I mm-hmm. think you're raising the important point with why aren't we meeting with our tax CPA on a quarterly basis to say, hey, here's where I'm at right now. Is there anything I can do in the next 3, 6, 9 months? Thoughts? What am I doing? I think, you know, it happens in anything in life. A little bit of planning and actual strategy usually pays large amount of dividends versus living in a reactive world.
You've mentioned property management companies, and you do a lot of accounting for property managers today. I would imagine you have a unique perspective on this front. Are there anything, due diligence-wise, anything we should be doing to prepare ourselves to make sure that that property manager is a good fit on the accounting side?
Yeah, 100%. You know, we look, you know, I've heard a lot of property managers, this isn't just my words, but a lot of property managers say, you know, for stabilized buildings, property management is really property accounting. I mean, that is one of the biggest things you need to nail. Because again, these people, yes, you need to lease the building. And I'm not trying to say accounting is the most important thing. At the end of the day, how quickly do they fill units that are empty if they're doing leasing? You know, what's their property management fee? What's their experience? You know, you're going down all those operational questions. But I think from an accounting perspective, if I am syndicating deals and I'm interviewing property managers, I'm saying, who's actually doing your accounting? What's the team? What's the close process? How quickly am I going to get my financials? Will you pay my mortgage and reconcile the replacement reserve, the tax escrow, the insurance escrow? Because I actually thought about outsourcing my property accounting at one point, and every property manager said, I won't pay your mortgage. And now I'm going to have to do double accounting, and I didn't like that. And so these are the questions I would be asking. And then I would probably say, what's your standard set of financial reports? Will you do accrual accounting, or is it just cash? Are you doing full balance sheet, or are you taking this all the way down to NOI? I think just saying, can you send me a sample financial packet that you send to your owners? I'd like to see what that looks like. You know, blur out the address and blur out any, I just want to see the structure. What does the balance sheet look like? What's the P&L look like? And I think that will tell you a lot, because behind the scenes, a lot of these companies, there's a lot of bookkeepers that know how to code bills and reconciling banks, have no idea what NOI is, R&M versus CapEx, below the line, why it matters. And I think you'd learn a lot from just looking at a package.
Yeah, it just seems like more and more, we've tried a number of property managers, and we've yet to be able to find that magic where our interests are aligned. And it's almost without the accounting, like you're saying, it's hard to, I don't want to say hold people accountable, but to have a better insight of what's going on instead of just propping up hours for a business that they're trying to be profitable.
Absolutely. It's a push-pull. And that's why so many of our clients, Jack, are in-housing. Like, I think 2/3 of our clients both own and manage their property. I'm not making the case that that's what one should do, because it doesn't make sense for everybody. But once you hit a certain scale, if you've got the gumption to actually want to manage these properties, a lot of people end up doing that, because now incentives are perfectly aligned. The incentive is lowest R&M as possible, but still taking care of the building. Highest occupancy as possible, but not giving away the rent. You know, that these are the things that sometimes the incentives of an owner and a third-party manager conflict.
Sure. You know, I'd imagine, you know, after somebody comes to you and decides, okay, I got to get some help with this, you've probably seen some pretty significant turnarounds on some things. Can you share a story of a company that you might have helped, either become profitable or it maybe change the outlook completely?
Yeah, look, there's a client that comes to mind that I'm not going to say their name, but they said, I think I'm going to butcher the quote, but it was basically, had we not found you guys, we were going out of business. We were totally going out of business. The cash flow was all mixed up. You know, they had an in-house maintenance company. They were also a property management company, and they were paying owners way more cash than they should have been because they weren't getting their banks reconciled in time and getting all these maintenance bills in time. And so any good accounting system, it's only as good as the data that's in there. So property 123 Main Street, for example, might have shown that it profited $800 last month, but that's only because they hadn't got the invoicing done from the maintenance company to send it over there to say, actually, they had a $600 bill, so we can only give that owner $200 this month. And you do that enough times, you get way behind. And now it becomes a really hard conversation. Go back to that owner and say, hey, you know what? We didn't bill you for the last 4 months for these things and you owe us $3,000, right? That's a hard thing, a hard sell. And so that's probably the number one that comes to mind. I mean, we've got over 150 clients and 150 staff. We have a lot of people. We're currently doing the accounting for about 90,000 units. So we've definitely got a lot of scale and a lot of stories, but that one kind of always comes to mind.
Well, I really appreciate some of this insight, Mark. Again, I'm just going to drive everybody to your website, rea.co/thank-you, and book a call with Mark's team there. Mark, before we wrap things up here, though, I do have some rapid fire questions. But I'll start with asking, is there any question or concept that you wish we would have covered here first?
I don't think so. I think these have been great questions, and I hope that I can help out at least one investor really be smarter the next time they interview a property management company.
Sure. Well, if you're ready, we'll go through some of these rapid fire questions.
Let's do it.
What lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
Well, I think that people think they're making a lot more money than they actually are. And most of the time it's because they haven't actually done all the numbers and calculated everything and they don't have good records, because one of the first clients we ever took on told us he was making millions and we quickly found out that he was losing large amounts of money. So I think that's probably it.
Do you have a book recommendation or what are you reading right now?
I am reading the book Traction right now by Gino Wickman. It's about implementing an operating system to run your company. It's not a real estate book, but I am big into reading, and that's what I'm reading right now as I'm trying to run a more efficient operation.
Yeah, it is a great book. What is one tool you can't live without?
My high-performance planner. In the digital age, I love my tech. But I journal in the morning and night and put my calendar down. Even though I got my digital calendar, I also have my paper calendar so I can just take notes and visualize it better.
If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Don't compare yourself to others so much. Compete with yourself. Everybody's unique. I used to obsess over how many units somebody else had or how much their job was or what school they went to. And I've realized now that I've been alive a little longer that it doesn't matter. And, you know, time, if you just stick at something, you're going to do great.
Sure. What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented that has a direct time-saving impact on your personal business?
Yeah, I feel like I'm just like promoting all these different products, but probably, you know, the one that I get some of the most use out of is a tool called Superhuman, which sits on top of Gmail. It's an email app. And I used to have a massive inbox and tons of unread messages that gave me all sorts of stress. And now I look at it and there's like 6 items in my primary list and I'm just never really stressed out about email anymore.
Okay.
It just makes you more efficient.
Well, I appreciate it again, Mark. Again, it is rea.co/thank-you. That's going to be a clickable link in the show notes, but really appreciate your time today, Mark. And I hope you'll come back again sometime.
Yeah, I hope. everybody thought it was helpful.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.